Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey guys, it's JVL and Tim here. We taped a show last night, Tuesday night. It's actually a fantastic show. Got some Dean Phillips talk, some Just the Tip talk, some Mark Robinson talk. But we knew things were still coming in, and we got word this morning that Nikki Haley is getting out of here. And so we wanted to just do a quick update. Tim, you are shocked, right? That's your shocked face.
I'm not shocked, but I'm pissed.
I'm kidding.
Can I be pissed?
Okay. Sure.
I feel like, you know, we just get in this thing. We get in this motion where there's the constant parade of horribles, and we all know that the Republican Party was going to do this. We've all been saying this for a year. You've been saying it for 3 years. And, like, even still, sometimes I just like to take these moments to just wake up, look at the news, and be like, these fucking guys, really? Really? They're doing this? They're nominating Donald Trump by acclamation?
Oh,
like
it gets
one
better.
State. What?
It gets better. Tim, not only are they nominating Trump by acclamation, but all of the people in conservative world who hate Donald Trump, but yet will never do anything to oppose him, and instead will attack anybody trying to stop Trumpism, they, this morning, are saying that it's our fault that Trump is the nominee. There were some people on MSNBC who were not properly concerned about how important immigration was in the minds of Virginia voters, and that's how you got Trump. And so it's all much worse than you think, even.
I just hate these people so much. And I know that one or two of them still listen, and I want you to know that I hope you feel a deep shame. Like, I just hope these people feel deep shame this morning. Because it's insane that they're doing this again. Like, there were opportunities to stop this person. Oh, and Don Bacon is tweeting this morning. Don Bacon, oh, my voters want this. My voters want this. It's like, oh, okay, Don Bacon. What if your voters demanded that their representative self-fist every morning? Was that something that you would do? Would you stick your own fist up your ass? Like, what if they,
yes.
Like, what if your voters demanded that you join the KKK and put on a hood and, like, I burn a cross? Like, is there any limiting principle on this?
Don't tempt him. I mean, look, the voters have said they want a person who makes fun of Nikki Haley's husband. And Nikki Haley's response is, well, I hope he works to earn their support. Right, so that's the big takeaway from her announcement this morning is that she hopes that Donald Trump will work hard to earn the support of all of her RINO voters.
To unite.
What do you think of that, Tim?
He's got to unite the party. He's got to work to unite it. I'm so happy you brought this up, JVL, because I was on TV for like 90 hours last night, but I never got the chance to address this sentence in her statement. Have you met Donald Trump? We're in year 10 of this. How long, how deep do we have to get in this? Where you're like, oh, maybe,
he could change.
Maybe Donald Trump will turn over a new leaf tomorrow.
You know, maybe he'll grow in office.
Yeah, maybe he'll turn over a new leaf. Maybe he'll start
the
to
become a
unit.
The presidency changes people. The presidential nomination really changes people, Tim. You know?
Maybe he'll just decide to unite. You know, maybe he'll decide that he cares about liberal democracy tomorrow and norms and the rule of law. Who knows? He could do it. He could get the Nikki Haley voter that's reading the Wall Street Journal editorial page on board. You know, if he just reaffirms his commitment to the free movement of people and goods.
Yeah.
low carried interest tax rates.
Can I ask you, what do you make of Nikki trying so hard to thread the needle here? Because, right, she doesn't want to say she's not for Trump. She doesn't want to say she's for him. And so she makes it about her voters and not him and puts the onus on. You could see her and her people last night being like, oh, well, we got him. We got him this time. You know, they're like Roscoe P. Coltrane and the Dukes of Hazzard. We're going to get that new boy. And I just think to myself, for what? For what? And I guess it's for the speaking fees. Right.
Isn't that true of everything since Iowa? I pray. I would like to be so wrong, people. I hope you understand. I'd love to be wrong about Nikki. I'd love for, you know, the Nikki Haley music, whatever it is, Barracuda to come on and her come out on stage with Joe Biden in Atlanta in a couple months. I would love it. I'd love to be wrong.
It would be great for America if it happened, and I would be 100% wrong, and I would be thrilled to be wrong as well, Tim.
I would tattoo wrong on my forehead. I'd do whatever Nikki wanted for in exchange for her doing this. I don't think she's going to. And I guess my big question is, I don't understand the point, really, of the last 2 months. Okay, you know, like I would have understood the point if it was a kamikaze mission to what Chris Christie's campaign. I understood the point of that. I would understand the point if she was trying, I think, in a meaningful way to kind of lead a. Sort of a splinter arm of the Republican Party and like become a future leader that has a very clear ideological bent and very clear criticisms of Donald Trump and, you know, where she's going to not join. But it's like the whole thing has just been kind of limp. I mean, she's had some good hits on him, a couple good hits. It's been better than nothing, but there hasn't been a coherent worldview or a coherent movement that she's trying to build. It seemed like somebody that just didn't want to step off the stage yet and was having donors fund it and wanted to keep going for as long as she could while saying like kind of what she thought mostly, but not all the way. Again, I'd love to be wrong, but that's just, it's felt to me a little bit soulless.
So my read on this is that Nikki is herself soulless. In the sense, we're all God's children, Tim, yeah, right, and she has inherent dignity just by dint of that. God love her, but I don't think she believes anything. I don't think that she believes that Joe Biden is more dangerous than Donald Trump. I don't think that she believes Donald Trump is all that dangerous. I said this in the show last night. Yeah. I think Nikki is, she's such a pure political creature that I think she just sort of moves around and like everything in the world for her is positioning. And when that's how your entire approach to existence is, that's how you get a campaign like this. That's kind of Twilight, right? Not one thing, not the other.
That feels right to me. I wish it isn't. I hope it isn't, but I think it is. So anyway, JVL, you might want to mention to people that at the end of the daily pod that I did with Aaron Haynes this morning, we brought on a special guest that I think that people will be interested to hear from.
And it's he's a paisan, good guy.
Good guy. Yeah, real good guy. Real good guy. You know,
Do you meet him at the Bada Bing?
Like he might have been to the Bada Bing. Anyway, I think people are going to like it, and they might, you know. Just make sure you make it to the end of the daily pod. That's just a little tip.
All right. So stick around all the way to the end of the daily show with Tim. Go listen to the rest of this show now. It's a good one. Bye-bye. Hello, everyone. This is JVL coming at you with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. Peek behind the curtain. We're taping this show on the evening of Super Tuesday. It's 9:30 at night currently. We got a bunch of calls in, but also a bunch of calls that are going to be coming out after you get this podcast early in the morning, namely California and Vermont. Tim is up doing MSNBC all night long. There'll be more Bulwark content all Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. It's going to be, I think, a lot of news coming out over the next 72 hours. But we start in Oklahoma, where it is tight as a tick. Dean Phillips trails Marianne Williamson by 15 votes. He is 15 votes away from second place in Oklahoma. And guys, the reverberations of this race nationally just can't be underestimated. Tim, what do you think about that?
You were going to talk about Dean Phillips' performance in the tip of Oklahoma, in the Oklahoma tip. Have you seen that?
Oh, just the tip?
He's doing extremely well in just the tip. That one Cimarron County, Dean Phillips at the very tippy tip of the little pointer there of Oklahoma. Dean Phillips 11, Joe Biden 6. So it could be his first county victory. It looks like it will be. 95% of the votes in Cimarron County, Oklahoma. Dean Phillips is on the board. I do have to say, just really quick, how sad this. I'm glad you brought a little levity to the start of this. Like, this is my candy. I love Super Tuesday. Sure. I'd be the guy. I'm out here. I've got tabs open. I got tabs. I'm texting people. What's happening in this county? And Donald Trump took this away from us. He's taken so much from us over the last 9 years that he's taken this just little bit of joy away from us as well. That there's nothing. We have nothing tonight.
Well, sure.
I don't know. Sure. I get a little bit of joy out of this tweet from Dean Phillips that says, "Congratulations to Joe Biden, uncommitted, Marianne Williamson, and Nikki Haley for demonstrating more appeal to the Democratic Party loyalists than me." Because I think Nikki Haley, I think this is true. I think there are more Dems right now turning out for Nikki Haley than for Dean Phillips.
100%.
Like, for sure.
I know the Dean Phillips thing isn't the most important thing, but we can dispense with it quickly, which is why I don't talk about it. I wrote about this today in the Triad, which you should all be signed up for. If you're watching this or listening to this, you should be getting the Triad. Just go to thebulwark.com and do it. It's good for you. Dean tweeted some weeks ago that after March 5, if he wasn't competitive, that he would, of course, withdraw and endorse Joe Biden and work just as hard to defeat Donald Trump as he had to defeat Joe Biden. What do you guys think of that? You think that's coming?
I kind of do, actually. Like, what he's got to get out after this. Like, and there's going to be, I mean, this is the end, my friends. This is the end of Dean Phillips.
Just so people know, as of right now, he's finished everywhere that he and Marianne Williamson are currently on the ballot together.
She's beating him.
She's beating him. I think there's one state in which he's ahead of her currently, but only one. Sorry.
Wait, can I just say that Dean Phillips actually does matter a little bit? And here's why. I was talking to a reporter today, and I realized as I was talking through the stages that people have gone through as they gear to get towards acceptance of Joe Biden and Donald Trump, like, I realized we've been going through the stages of grief, right? And we have done our bargaining, and our bargaining is with these third parties and with Dean Phillips.
Some of us have done our bargaining. I don't know if you're listening to the Monday, Monday
Daily podcast.
Hi,
Bill.
Hi, Bill.
I'm just, you know, the Nikki people, and like, we're in depression now, and we're on our way to acceptance, right? Okay, but anger. We had anger, right? Like, we really did all the phases of grief. But here's what Dean Phillips shows us. There's the people who are as they're bargaining, they're like, well, if there was another Democratic candidate, maybe someone younger, like, obviously everybody would want that person. And Dean Phillips has been there offering essentially Joe Biden's politics with a younger body, a biochemical structure. And you
more
know what?
Muscle mass.
Yeah.
Less arthritis.
Longer telomeres.
No one's even like a little bit interested. And
nope.
I think it says something. Like, Dean Phillips isn't great, but he's not like horrendous. So why isn't anybody interested? I don't know.
He's not a kook, right? He isn't Marianne Williamson, right?
I mean, part of it is the campaign that he ran. And I always said, when you guys back in 2020, we're talking about, and this shows you how sad this Super Tuesday night is, that here we are. We're 5 minutes in, we're already reminiscing about the great 2020 primary between Joe Walsh and Donald Trump. But when Bill and you were recruiting people to primary Trump, and I was kind of quasi-involved in that at a lesser degree, I had several conversations with Bill when he would like throw names at me. What about so-and-so? What about so-and-so? And I was always like, you have to like pass a certain threshold of seriousness before people will give you a listen. And like, and you can only, it's like, you know it when you see it, you know, so the Supreme Court porn thing, it's like, you can't, there's not like a hard and fast
Larry
rule.
Hogan,
it's not like all Congress. Yeah. Larry Hogan would have passed
Larry Hogan would have passed it. Joe Walsh, not so much.
Some, and then Congress, even some Congress people, like I made the case that Kinzinger, had he done it, probably would have passed it barely, right? Because he was a Congress, you know, he'd been a been in the military and he was public facing. But then other some other Congress people, you're like, yeah, I think Dean just the gelato, like it just fell on the gelato side of the line. It's just like I just don't think people could take him seriously, and so it was never really a thing. You know, it would have been very different if. Obviously, I think it would have been somewhat different had somebody with a little bit more heft done it. I think we would have ended up the same
place. But you guys think that Dean, after this, Dino is just going to, you know, he's going to say, well, I gave it the good old college effort, all respect to President Biden, and now I'm going to go out and work for him, and I'm going to call Jesse Waters and tell him I'm ready to come back on his show and talk about how great Joe, because I don't think that's what's coming. I think Tulsi Gabbard is what's coming.
No, I'm with Sarah. Well, that's a gentleman's bet. We'll figure that out. I think that Dean's going to do the right thing. I think that there are some other people out there that I have deeper questions about. But I think that Dean will do the right thing. And, besides... Well, I meant the Republican people. I just meant
we're going to get to that in segment three. Yeah,
exactly.
We're going to get to that in segment three. Don't go getting ahead of it. All right. So that's all the intrigue on the Democratic side.
Oh, well, you didn't mention that Uncommitted does have two delegates now. So Joe Biden has it's 800 and we're doing this live here, but it's 800 and something to two. So
okay. So it won't be a total shutout. That's excellent.
Good job, Rashida Tlaib's sister.
In the Republican side, Nikki Haley might win Vermont. Yay. Yeah.
As we sit right now, the needle gives her a lean Haley plus 2.8% is the needle's estimated margin. The New York Times needle that I finally have done enough therapy to that I can look at it without breaking out into sweats, and so that's good. I also noticed that Nikki Haley won Denver, so rep my people. It is the city with the highest, like the non-college town, like the major, like of the top 25 cities, it's the city with the highest concentration of college-educated white people, which is the group that Donald Trump does the worst in. So anyway, but maybe there's something also in the weed or something, you know, in the water there in Denver. So that was good.
Hold on a second. If you're just going to throw things out, yeah, but even Denver, I actually think Denver, she's only winning by 10 points. Denver should be like the Assad. Level numbers for her.
Yeah, that's fair.
I gotta say,
she's losing Austin though. By comparison, she's losing Austin.
Jeez. So this is the thing I want to say that I think I'm interested in what you guys think. But as I'm watching this, right? So like, yeah, she's only winning Denver by 10 points. She's losing suburban counties like Arapahoe, Jefferson. Those are like Dem strongholds. I think she's weirdly underperforming right now.
Yeah.
And like, so the Vermont thing is cool from a disrupts Donald Trump's narrative of a clean sweep. So that would be great. Okay. I don't know that I think that matters. To me, what matters is the margins in all of these states, because I'm pretty obsessed with the exit polls. And we can go through some of them where you get Nikki Haley voters saying that they will not commit to voting for the Republican nominee, like a really high margin across exit polls in a bunch of these states, have people who are voting for Nikki Haley, you know, 80% of them, 74% of them saying, no, I won't commit to supporting the Republican nominee. And what they're saying there is, I'm not going to vote for Trump. And so that number to me is what is relevant here, is what do Nikki Haley's people do after they, you know, dust themselves off, you know, and stop. Get over, you know, they smart over their loss, and then what do they do next? And I'm seeing good evidence that the people who are actually voting for Haley won't necessarily vote for Trump, but I'm worried that I'm not seeing as much life and energy in this Super Tuesday for her as I would have liked.
Yeah, I agree with both those points. So I'm pulling up Virginia, for example. You know, and right now she's only winning the Albemarle County where Charlottesville is. Like Nova, Richmond, Trump is winning. Again, some of this stuff, numbers are coming in overnight. So, you know, maybe some of these she pulls off. But like just as a general trend, and even in Virginia, just as a base number, 90% in, she has 34. You know, you would have wanted Virginia to be closer to like a New Hampshire number.
Virginia's an open state, right?
Yeah, Virginia's an open primary state. This was Virginia. This is like, you look at the states where Marco did well last time, right? And that's kind of
the... I want to do a whole deep dive on Nikki and Marco in a minute. But Tim, want to give us a word from our sponsor?
Sure, I'm happy to do that. Let me tell you, if there's a surefire way to wake up feeling fresh after a night of drinking or after a night of being on MSNBC until 2 a.m., it is with ZBiotics. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make ZBiotics pre-alcohol your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly and you'll feel your best tomorrow. My friend who is the biggest advocate of ZBiotics probiotic is coming to visit in 1 month in New Orleans, and we're throwing a party at our house. So we'll just be handing out ZBiotics at the party. We'll see how that goes. If you want to have a party like that, go to ZBiotics.com/next level to get 15% off your first order when you use next level at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with 100% money back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/next level and use the code next level at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and our good times.
I did a little bit of a deep dive on Loudoun County because Loudoun is interesting to me. It's one of the wealthiest counties in America, and it is a hot developing suburban exurban part of the DC area in Virginia, which I think is representative of a bunch of areas in America. And right now, Trump is beating Nikki in Loudoun 52-46, which sounds not bad for her, right? You think, oh, that's not bad. In 2016, Trump got schlonged by Rubio. Rubio doubled him up in Loudoun. And that was with, a bunch of other people were still in the race at that point. And so to the extent that the Trump has consolidated those people in Loudoun, that makes me a little bit nervous. And I look at Nikki. I mean, Nikki only won Fairfax County by 18 points. She's 58-40 in Fairfax. And those are the places where I would just expect her to be doing much, much better. And the fact that she's not makes me wonder, does that mean that Trump is stronger in these counties than we think going to the general election? Or does it mean that there's just more people who are going to leave him?
I was kind of getting there before the, in segment one. And I think it's hard to determine because there hasn't been a campaign in these places. Right.
Right.
And so it's
this
like,
is right.
So this is like not a really like this isn't science. OK, like we're not doing science. We don't have beakers out. You know, it's like I think that Nikki is overperforming some of these places because the people that are the most excited to vote are like MSNBC watching and independent leaning Dems. Right. And the soft Republican types that are going to be the swing people. I do think they voted in South Carolina. I think some of them voted in Virginia, but some of them are just like, why would I vote? Why, you know, is there a primary today? And I had friends that texted me, is today Super Tuesday? You know, and so like I think that the a big part of the swing electorate is did not turn out here. I think that the interesting question that's quasi-science, which Sarah referenced, is the among the people that did turn out to vote for her today, they hate Donald Trump. I mean, that we only had exit polls in three states, but California was, of the Haley voters, it was 69% that said that they wouldn't vote for Trump, which is nice. 81% was in, I don't have the other, in front of me, but 81% was either Virginia or North Carolina, I think North Carolina. So, I mean, those are huge numbers. And so the question then, which is going to be up to the Biden data team and everybody is figuring out, okay, some of those are gettable Republicans. Some of those are Trump voters. Some of those are the Trump voters against Trump. Some of them are Biden. A lot of them are Biden voters, right? And so figuring out what percentage they are is really the answer for us to like how good of news that is. But
so let me throw something at you. I just do a quick bit of math here. This is more of a Sarah question, I think, but actually for both of you. So let's say Nikki Haley gets 20. She looks like she's headed towards about 25% of the vote, right? If we're looking at 60% or so of those people in exit saying that they won't support for the nominee, what that means is that's roughly 15% of the total Republican vote saying they won't they won't support the nominee. Now, this is not apples to apples. Some of these primaries are closed. Some of them are open. But in 2020, Trump won self-identified Republicans 94-6. So he was at 94% on retention of self-identified Republicans. It seems to me he's going to be below that this time around. Now, I mean, maybe it's all the way down to 90, but maybe it's a little bit low. I don't know. But does that smell right to you, Sarah?
So here's the thing. This is so just rock with me here for a second. I think two things are true right now. I think that the party has very much consolidated around Trump to the point where Rubio's numbers are sort of a meaningless comparison to Nikki Haley. Because at the time, Marco Rubio was still a favorite son of a big chunk of the Republican Party. And that party has changed, right? We are 8 years later and a bunch of stuff is different. So I think it is possible that Nikki Haley is both sort of underperforming what I might have expected, but I think it's for the reason that Tim said. The reason she did better in places like, and so this is, if you just look at South Carolina and New Hampshire versus Michigan, what's the big difference? I mean, obviously she was governor of South Carolina, but she did much better in those places. Michigan's an open primary too. The difference was she spent like $16 million in South Carolina. You know, she spent God knows how much in New Hampshire because that was where she was staking it all. She spent almost no money in Michigan because it was a quick turnaround after South Carolina. And obviously she didn't have the cash to go spend in all of these states. So she's not able to mobilize the anti-Trump coalition. But when you do spend time working to mobilize the anti-Trump coalition, it does look like they turn out in these states. And so I think that I don't know that we have to worry so much about whether or not she's underperforming. I do think the most important thing is the percentage that she ultimately picks up. And let me hit you guys with this. I think I said this last week, but I've been refining this particular rubric. The Republican Party has basically been this 70-30 party for a while. And I've locked into the 70-30 number when it was about the election being stolen. Because 70% of the Republican Party believes that the 2020 election was stolen. 30% doesn't. And we've been sort of studying that 30%. I've been thinking about it. Now we have, when you look at the anybody polls, the number of people who say they won't vote for Donald Trump if he's convicted of a crime. Okay, there's been a couple of polls. They're all right around 30%. You look at the percentage that Nikki Haley got from self-identified R's in South Carolina, and then what she got in Michigan from the sort of unmobilized group. It's all around. She got like 27% in Michigan. She got 28% in South Carolina. Of self-ID'd R's in New Hampshire, she also got around 28%. So there's this 30%-ish number, and it looks like nationally right now she's shaping up to get about 25%. So that's a little bit soft. But to your point, JBL, if you then look at, okay, well, what percentage of, with self-identified R's, what percentage of those people absolutely refuse to vote for Donald Trump? If that's higher than half of those people, that's a bigger chunk than 2020. So it's possible that both she is weaker right now in this matchup because of the consolidation, but that he is also weaker in a general election. Sorry, it took me a long time to get there, but that's it, that they are both weaker in this moment.
Right. I mean, the theory then, I mean, just to sum it up, is that like, okay, it's a pretty small rump at this point that is against Trump. But like, is that small rump bigger than 6% or 8%? I mean, this is all the math on when we look at exit polls from last time. You know,
if it is, that's
even
a big
getting
deal.
It up to 10%, 11% yeah. is very meaningful. Right, as far as presenting.
So Sebastian says that after Pew did the better math about the exits, it was Trump held on to 92% of Republicans.
Right.
If that goes to 90% in this election, that is absolutely meaningful, right? So what happens to Nikki tomorrow? We finish this. Maybe she ekes out her Vermont win. Yay! Does she drop out?
Well, she needs three more states to be able to put in nomination and have a convention fight. She has D.C. and Vermont. Looking at the map, not seeing three more really out there. Maybe America. Has America Samoa voted? Jinx.
How about that?
Yeah. So I don't know. That is there. I'd like to be able to vote for her in Louisiana. I don't want my re-registration to go to waste, okay, in a couple of weeks. Now, that's going to be like an 88 to 12 type situation, but it would just give me the endorphin boost I need to go in there and look at his fucking name in the on the ballot and to fill in the other bubble. That'd make me feel nice. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, what was her point of running till today, right? Like, the campaign's been over. So this continues to be a psychological question about Nikki Haley more than a political question, right? And unless you're of the view, which I'm not, that this is some like, oh, she wants to gain power for a cut a deal with Trump, or she wants to gain future power within the party. To me, it's like every day that she stayed in hurt her within the Republican Party. So to me, it's not like there's any calculation that's happening politically there. So it's just a question of, you know, whether she feels fulfilled by this. I think we get into kind of Brené Brown territory about what she does after this.
Sarah, what do you think?
I mean, part of the reason I think she does get out probably tomorrow or in the next couple of days is that it gets really hard, right? She's been sort of going on TV and, you know, everyone's like, but what's the case? You haven't won any states. And she's like, well, we need to give people a voice. Super Tuesday, there's all these states that are going to vote. It gets sort of harder after this, where she basically doesn't even have enough delegates to go to convention to like go into interviews and make a case for why she's still doing this. Like it basically no longer makes sense. And also the money's, she's been kind of going along on the fumes of small dollar donations from the permanently barred, you know, sort of group that's really into her. Does that keep going? I mean, look, would I love to see her roll through the convention and just make the case in every state against Donald Trump? I would. It's also very helpful for those of us who are trying to identify these persuadable voters going into the general election. She's basically creating a map for us, right? She's like, here are the people. We can go into these counties, see where she did well. So it'd be great if she stayed in. I just can't see how she, I mean, Tim, you've run campaigns. Like the media, the only question she would get asked is like, what are you still doing? And that becomes a pretty lousy question when you don't have a good answer.
Yeah, though she hasn't had a good answer for a while. John Kasich stayed in for a long time. I almost feel like it's one of those things where that's a really painful process when you still hope that you're going to win. Right, because it takes a psychological toll when, like, you feel like you're trying to put a strategy in place to win, and every time you go on TV and you want to make an argument against your opponent, they're like, "When are you going to drop out, sir?" Like that, like, is painful. I've lived that, but I feel like she's through that. I feel like she's like broken through that and is now past caring about that.
Well, see, that's now interesting.
It's like, hey, I'm just looking for something to do and have fun and like get out there and have people. If somebody's talking to me, that's a win. What am
Couldn't
I going to be doing tomorrow
say,
morning?
I love the Constitution and I'm here to protect it.
Well, yeah. that's it, JBL, right? So like if she felt driven by like, no, I'm going to keep making this case about Donald Trump's unfitness, right, because this is important for the country. God, would I love her for that. And I think she should stay in and I think she should do that. That's not quite what she's been doing, though. Like her rhetoric is tough on Trump, right? She's tougher and she's making a case. But it's not like she's driven by like the desperate need to make sure Trump's not the nominee, because she's still doing the whole "but Biden's worse" shtick.
Yeah.
And as
yeah.
long as she does that,
yeah.
then maybe she just likes the crowds and likes being on TV and like, boy, if he shuts this down, I got to go home and mow the lawn. And that sounds boring.
I don't even know that I believe, honestly, I don't know that I believe that Nikki believes that Trump is all that dangerous.
Really? I don't know. I think she does. Your assessment is kinder to her than maybe mine is, because I think when you do know how dangerous he is and you still equivocate, that it's very bad.
No, she thinks it's bad, right? Yeah, oh, it's bad. It's ridiculous. But, you know, if you pressed her, like really pressed her, gave her truth serum, said, hey, do you think there's a chance that Trump could overturn democracy and that he wouldn't leave office at the end of, you know, 2024 or something? I think she would say, she would take the Ross Douthat view. Oh, no, don't be crazy. That's Trump derangement syndrome. Yeah.
She'd take the AEI view. I mean, she's the AEI candidate. let's just be honest. She's the AEI candidate. And if you went to an AEI fundraiser and polled 100 people there, they all voted for Nikki Haley. How many of them are like really worried that Donald Trump is going to end democracy? Like two. The rest of them are like, oh, well, it's fine. I got my house on Sullivan Island. And, you know, things are the stock market did well when he was in last time. And I think that might be right.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Okay, so there's some other interesting stuff going on. In North Carolina, the Republican primary for the gubernatorial race, super interesting. A gentleman named Mark Robinson, a furniture magnate, is going to be the Republican nominee for governor. And he, you know, he's a MAGA guy. He's part of the New Look Republican Party. He really doesn't like gays or Jews, though.
Can I just
very, Jennifer, very bad on the gays, very bad on the Jews.
Jennifer Bendry, a gay. I don't know her religion, so I don't know if she fits as the Jewish category as well. She's at the Huffington Post. She's done a nice
gay
job.
Gay Jews? He really doesn't like the gay Jews the most of all.
This person is a friend of mine. Jen's a friend of mine.
Jen, yeah. Okay. So she's done great work on this. So I want to credit her. I searched for multiple sites to find the best compilation of Mark Robinson's crazy, and I think she did the best job. Subtitle, Mark Robinson says, Beyonce is satanic, that the moon landing may have been fake, and there's a ruling class of secret reptiles. here we go. He said that the 9/11 attacks were an inside job. He's seriously skeptical of Kennedy assassination and of the 2017 shooting in Las Vegas. He accused David Hogg, survivor of the Stoneman Douglas school shooting, of being a paid actor. Obviously, thinks climate change is junk science. He thought that the coverage of police shootings is part of a media conspiracy, has done the QAnon rallying cry, where we go one, we go all. We got a lot of other good ones here. The entire bombing story is faker than a $20 Rolex sold on a New York City sidewalk.
By a Jew. Sorry, no, you didn't say that part.
He said that about the pipe bombs, the report about pipe bombs that were intended for President Obama. A lot of good ones here. He tried to, Jay-Z is demonic, Beyonce satanic. And the 2014 Boko Haram kidnapping of schoolgirls in Nigeria was orchestrated by billionaire George Soros.
Ooh.
So there you go. That's the that's a Republican nominee. And North Carolina has a Democratic governor. It's not like North Carolina, it's not like Mississippi.
Is that going to be a drag on the Republican ticket in North Kakalaki?
I think so.
I think it is. JVL, come on, man.
Yes.
Wait, can I just say one of the
come
things?
On he what? Call, what are you?
He called the school shooting survivors media prostitutes. Prostitutes.
Are you saying they aren't prostitutes?
That's clever. So it's like a tater tot prostitute combo?
No, it's like kids. Like they're tots as their kids.
Toddlers. It's a toddler's prostitutes combo.
Kids prostituting themselves for, I guess, attention because they suffered through a police or a school shooting. Okay.
That is fucking terrible. JBL, you suck. You're a douchebag. And we hate you. You're awful, Mark Robinson.
This guy's the worst. This guy's the worst. And JBL, I think that the North Carolina Democratic governor can beat this guy. Like, I do.
So the Democrat is a good candidate. It's a very
he is
not to stereotype here. I'm about to do the thing when like you make a basketball comp and there's a white basketball player and you're like, he's kind of like Larry Bird by comparing him to the other white basketball player. But Josh Stein, the Jewish attorney general in North Carolina, is kind of similar to Josh Shapiro, just in his brand of politics. Kind of center left.
He's gay.
No, he's
Jewish.
Just normie.
He's going to be an ugly
word. Normie, Jewish, center left guys. And I mean,
at least
different
he's a straight
states,
Jew.
But
well, Mark. Will Mark shake his hand at debates, or is that a no?
Don't know. I don't know. Will he want
he's
to
a Holocaust
touched?
Denier too? I think this
he is
a
Holocaust denier as well. That's true. Something about he did a post that was essentially something like, "You're telling me that that Hitler disarmed millions of Jews and then killed them. Okay, whatever you say. He did a post that was kind of like that.
I'm asking just a very serious question to you guys. Tell me the percentage. So if you have the Venn diagram of people who believe that the school shooting kids are all crisis actors and that 9/11 is an inside job and that the moon landing was faked and that the Kennedy assassination has something fishy going on, what percentage of the people inside that circle are not also Holocaust deniers? Because I feel like if you're signed up for all those things, you got the group discount. You know, you took that ticket for the ride, too.
Yeah. Here's the thing. You keep calling it North Kakalaki. And the thing about North Carolina is it is on every, like, strategist. It's on most of their swing state lists. I will tell you it's not on mine because I think it's a Trump state. I think it's still too red. But it has been, its suburban populations have been growing a ton over the last decade. It still has a lot of obviously very red rural areas, but it's also got a lot of big metro areas. It's got a tech center. It's got big universities, big hospitals, and the Democrat has been elected governor. Like it does the split ticket normie Dem and still elects Trump. And so there's a lot of people on Twitter sort of suggesting that maybe this puts North Carolina in play for Biden because they'll have a normie Dem governor on the top of the ticket and a total psycho on the Republican side.
That's what I wanted to ask you. Does it put it in play for Biden?
I don't think so. So I think this is where split tickets just happen because I think Trump is perfectly acceptable to a lot of these voters in a way that this crank might not be.
I'm not going to say North Carolina is not in play. It's March 5th. It might be in play. It's not at the top of my list. It's not going to be the tipping point state, so I don't think it really matters. But I'm not going to say it's not in play. Obama won. The crossover voter thing is interesting. And I think speaks to the really perverse thing that Donald Trump has done to our politics about like national politics versus state politics is I really do think they're going to be like suburban Charlotte, like banker guys that like look at this and they're like, I don't know that I want this like black pastor guy who like doesn't like Jews or gay people running the state because that's a real job and that affects me. And it might like, you know, he might scare businesses away and it might hurt our business formation here in the state. But as president, I think we could use a businessman like Donald Trump. I think that's what voter exists. It seems crazy that somebody might look at the governor's seat and say that's a serious job that requires a serious person, and the president, the commander, the leader of the free world is a different animal. But I worry that that happens. Yeah, I think that I think Trump has brainwashed people into
they will
into
campaign
like
together. They'll be on a stage together in North Carolina.
But you may have heard Tim mention something that actually he didn't mention before that you may not have realized, JBL, which is that this gentleman is black. And that may also that there's not always that Venn diagram that you talk about. Like there are things that Trump will get away with that he won't. He is a bad candidate all around. He's a lunatic. But I'm just So just FYI.
From Sebastian, this is the Mark Robinson quote: Hitler disarming millions of Jews and then marching them off to concentration camps is a bunch of hogwash. Great.
Yeah.
Hey, in other news, Dinesh D'Souza's son-in-law, Brandon Gill, doing okay in Tejas, running for a seat. Tim, do you have something you want to?
Yeah, I want to bring this up because, you know, there's a lot of things happening tonight. And, you know, the Haley-Trump race, like at this point, Haley's done. And you know, Robinson wins this race. But, like, there hasn't been, like, a very, like, I like this House race because it's kind of a clear encapsulation of the state of the party. Okay, so we're looking at the Texas 26th there. Okay, so Texas 26th is kind of like not quite Plano, but whatever's next to Plano in the North Dallas suburbs, and then it does go out into rural Texas a little bit. But you know, we're in Dallas suburbs, exurbs territory, so we're not out in West Texas here. Okay, and we had a primary. It was like an 11-way primary, but there were three main candidates. Mr. Gill is Dinesh D'Souza's son-in-law. His resume, his CV, is that he was the marketing director for the 2000 Mules movie.
Ooh.
That like did the fake election fraud stuff about how Dinesh just like looked at some cell phone data and was like, whoa, people were going to the mailbox a lot. That must have been, they must be mules muling dead people's votes. And like, that was the extent of their evidence. And this now, like, I went to one of the game events I went to for the Blake Masters event, like Ted Cruz was speaking for Blake Masters and Ted Cruz just goes 2000 mules. And everybody in the crowd's like, yeah, 2000 mules. And I was like, 2000 mules, what? Like, he didn't even say what it was. He just like it was like a buzzword. So anyway, so 2000 mules that penetrated. So he was the marketing director for that. So I guess kudos, his marketing work did well. He's running against like the mayor of one of these like suburban towns next to Dallas. He's running against a lady that was the chief of staff for Tony Gonzalez, who's like a center right.
Yeah. How voted many mules did she uncover?
Yeah, exactly. So she's a Hispanic woman. Exactly. Hispanic woman. So you have a chief of congressional chief of staff for a normal congressman, a mayor, and then you have a 30-year-old guy who is the marketing director for a conspiracy film. He wins in a landslide. Like, I haven't seen the final number. The last I saw, it's an 11-way race. He has 60% vote share in an 11-way race. And so
why not?
I just
not even going to runoff, man. Not even going to runoff.
So, you know, I think that it's a night. We all know this. We all know this. But sometimes you kind of need these little encapsulations about what is happening and, you know, what kinds of people are cycling in to the Republican Congress and where things are headed. And let me tell you, you know, when Mr. Gill gets in there next year, I don't think that he's going to be there to do some legislating. I don't think he's there to be compromising, working across the aisle. I think he's calling Abigail Spanberger's office saying, hey, can we work together on a VA bill? I think that he's going to be like shitposting.
So this leads me to something. The only thing I actually wanted to talk about today, somebody put in front of me something Bill Barr said a couple weeks ago in Naples at some fancy rich person association. He said, voting for Trump is playing Russian roulette with the country. That sounds bad. You're not supposed to play Russian roulette. Voting for Biden is outright national suicide.
Brought down the House. Brought down the House.
I have so many questions because, I feel like we see a lot of Brandon Gills on one side of the political spectrum. And on the other, I don't see the Democrats nominating a whole bunch of crazies. In fact, I see people like primarying Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar. Whatever. But I have a lot of questions about this Bill Barr thing.
Tlaib's not getting primaried, just as a matter of fact checking, but whatever.
Oh, she's Omar not? Okay, I'm sorry.
Bowman, so who, Omar and Bowman and okay. A couple of the other ones are Cori Bush.
So, I mean, if voting for Biden is outright national suicide, then isn't the country already dead because he was elected president? No? Like, it doesn't matter anymore then because we no longer have a country because the country is dead. No?
This is a deep thinker. And it's kind of like there's a guy that's been playing on MSNBC all day today where they interviewed him outside of a polling location in Alabama. And they asked him about the IVF thing. He's like, I don't understand how embryos can be human if you can freeze them. Because you can't freeze me. Then I'd be dead.
Or could we?
Kind of like, touche, sir.
And so, the embryos are the lizard like people. That. They're just very tiny lizard people.
I hadn't thought about it like that.
What do we think? Where do we think Mark Robinson is on IVF? I can't wait to find that out. So, I mean, the Bill Barr thing, we're just going to hear this Bill Barr. We're going to hear variations of this Bill Barr thing over and over and over again for the next 9 months. And there will be people who do it tomorrow. And then there will be people who wait to do it until October. And they'll seize on something will happen somewhere, right? A bomb will go off somewhere in the world. And they will use that as their hook to say, I mean, look, I don't want to vote for Donald Trump, but this horrible thing X in Uzablagablagablagastan just happened, and I can't trust Joe Biden to handle that. The stakes are too high. And this shit makes me so fucking angry.
It's a national suicide. You can just see it all out on the street. You're out on the street. I mean, Bill Barr's life, you can just see it. It's like there are raving hordes of people outside his home all the time. He can't go to the store, can't get a cookie. shrinkflation.
So I would ask Bill Barr, like, okay, let's just pretend. Let's live in a world where Joe Biden wins the 2024 election. What happens then? Like, if that's national suicide, are there no more elections? Does Joe Biden...
No, I think that non-binary youth...
What does that even mean?
And non-binary this guy, youth would
litter boxes in every school.
Litter boxes. I had a mom this weekend come up to me and say, you're not going to believe this, Tim, but they have a dog bowl at the local high school. And I was like, they don't. I was like, they do not have a dog bowl at the local high school. It was she was dead serious. Also, right
now. You know what? They might have a dog bowl. It's probably for people's dogs. It's probably for regular dogs.
She was like, are you sure? I was like, let's call the principal together. I'm happy to call the principal with you. She was like, okay, I'll take your word for it.
It's too late to be doing this podcast.
This stuff drives me so crazy. But this stuff makes me angry. Because again, Bill Barr is not just some dude at National Review with a Twitter account, like looking to get off, right? He's the former attorney general
who Donald Trump has pilloried since he left, and who
he's a
you
legal
know,
scholar.
But here's the thing, JBL. So when you just did your little riff, you just described the whole Wall Street Journal editorial page. Like the Biden is worse position is where elite conservatives who have a job and a career at stake in Conservative Inc. will be. And they will present it as though it is self-evident, right? This is I encounter this all the time. This Joe Biden, well, Joe Biden's ruining the country. And you look around and you say, it doesn't feel ruined. It feels okay. We have an issue at the border, and but like ruined? Like I don't. So, but that is how, and they will be like a statement of fact that in those rooms they will all agree with. But I actually, what's interesting to me is I think that that is going to be like a very hyper elite conservative position, right? People who have something to lose from there being a Democratic president. I still think that you're going to have a bunch of voters, okay? And the double haters are a real thing. Saw Nate Cohn, the New York Times, use double haters. Just remember, I've been using it for a long time. Yeah, man. I also like using a pox on both their housers, but the fact is,
you really like using that.
I do. I like to go through.
It makes me happy for you when you ever get to mention
Thanks.
It.
Thanks, man. These are people who hate both. And so far in 2020 and in 2022, people who are down on both have broken for Joe Biden. They've broken for the Democratic candidates away from Trump and extreme candidates like him. Will that happen again in 2024? I'm not positive about that, but that is historically what has happened.
Look, the truth is, I can understand why if you're Paul Gigot and you're at the journal op-ed page or something, the reason you do this is because you have to write something every day. People want to know what you want to think. If you're Bill Barr, you don't have to say anything about this. Nobody cares what he thinks. Nobody's asking him proactively.
You care what he thinks.
He's just off
you're
making
mad.
Money.
JBL,
he's just off
it's
making
for
money.
The applause. He's doing it for the applause.
Is that what it is?
He hit the Tampa the Chamber of Commerce. He wanted
cheap
the applause.
Pop. Right. All right. Last thing.
We got to save it for next week. Poor Sarah has to be up at 6 a.m. I'm up till 2 a.m. We're just giving you guys takes after takes after takes. And let me tell you.
We give until it hurts. Look at Sarah. Look how tired she is.
The Joe Biden strategy memo. Well, that'll be there next week. We can break that down for everybody.
Yeah. Right. I'm going to be on Morning Edition at 6:25. If anybody wants to listen to me give this exact same analysis in 8 hours.
This will already be out by then, but that's okay. maybe we can go back and find it in the archives or something.
Guys, good show. Long show. Everybody, thanks for being with us. Go over to Bowler Plus. Subscribe. Get all of our stuff. It's good stuff. And I hope that your Super Tuesday was... Well, who am I even kidding? It was lousy. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
The
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.